Hello and welcome to the God is a Geek podcast. My name is Adam Cook and it's back to the intimate style podcast that apparently people quite like. It's just me and one week it is going to be, I'm just going to say it's just me and just me. But it's not this week. This week it's Chris White. Chris White, how are you?
I'm all right, mate. How are you?
I am not going to burden our listeners with how I feel right now. Let's just get on with the pod and pretend like the world is a wonderful place full of joy, and not people out there who are just like, I don't know, should we say bad at driving or will crash into and smash cars to pieces. And
you know, because
I don't know about you, Chris, but the world, it can be a beautiful place. It can be a fantastical place. But it can also be dangerous out there, Chris, can't it?
It sure can, mate. It sure can. That was wonderful.
Oh, no, I haven't finished, bro.
You're on a roll.
Because it's a dangerous place out there. And the thing is that one of the real dangers out there is on the roads. You know, accidents from, I don't know, Chris, would you say that, you know, accidents happen because of dangerous driving?
Oh, yes, they certainly do.
They do.
Glorious.
I got there in the end, yeah.
So, yeah, dangerous driving. It's pretty good, mate, I'll be honest. I think it's very much a kind of budget burnout game.
Should we give some background as to why people should care?
I think we should.
Harsh, but, you know.
No, we should, yeah.
Go for it.
So Criterion Games, who obviously were the developers behind the Burnout series, some of the games directors and some of the other staff members forged a team called Three Fields Entertainment, and this is the team behind Danger Zone 2 and Dangerous Golf as a theme, and like they were okay. I'm not sure. I'm trying to work it out. I think it's something to do with danger, maybe.
I thought it was golf. Okay.
But this game here, Dangerous Driving, is the most familiar to the Burnout series we've had. Like the Danger Zones were different scenarios where you had to crash a car in style, but it wasn't like a racing game really. It was very kind of limited. There were racing elements, but this features a lot of different racing modes where the kind of aim of the game is to crash or to take down other cars that you're racing against, earn kind of like points to build your boost meter. It's just a lot of speed, a lot of crashing, and it's very familiar. Like it's a great game in terms of just putting it on and just not thinking about anything. And the races themselves are they're quite varied. There are familiar ideas that you would have seen in Burnout, it's like the road rage where you get the most kind of take downs in a race, and lots of other kind of stuff. But it's really good.
It's just so with their previous two games, I felt like there's an idea, and they didn't kind of fully deliver or maybe fully execute on the idea, but it mostly felt like they could have with a bigger budget.
Yeah, and absolutely.
To say Dangerous Driving feels a bit like Burnout 3 is like saying chips go quite well with fish, like that's a terrible analogy. I can't even speak, Chris. Allergy. I was going to say that's a terrible allergy. And you know what? I'm that tired. I'm going to say that because no one can correct me apart from you. And if you do, that's fine. But what I'm trying to say is that Dangerous Driving really feels like Burnout 3.
Yeah, like it does.
To the point where it almost feels like Three Fields they've made this game as a pitch to EA to say, like, hey, give us the license, we'll make it. If you don't want to make Burnout, you don't give a shit. We'll make it, though. It's so familiar. It still feels to me a little bit bare bones.
Yeah. Yeah,
like,
it is.
There's one song, as far as I can tell, in the game. And it's got Spotify integration, hasn't it? Like, yeah. And I don't mind that, but it does sort of feel... Oh, I don't know. I'm not sure what I'm looking for, the right word. I can't quite find it. It just feels... Because I don't want to do it disservice, because it is fun. And I'm well up for arcade races. But it's just... It still feels a bit low budget, which I suppose it is, right?
Yeah. I mean, the kind of Burnout games are very polished. There's a lot of kind of menu integration. There's... kind of a lot going on. This is a throwback to like the racing games, which are very straightforward. It was a case of selecting your track and racing and then moving on to the next track, race that. The thing that kind of gives it that replayability is like there's six classes of car. So you start off with the sedan and you end up moving into like the Formula DD, they're called, which obviously your Formula Racing cars. So the speed of your vehicle genuinely increases, and then like the handling will change. There's slight variations with every new class, and then within that class I don't know how many races there are. There's about 70 in total, but they're all kind of different styles. So you've got your takedowns or your road rage ones, which your sole purpose is to take down as many cars within the allotted time. There's a face-off mode where you face one other racer and you've just got to try and beat them and take them out, try and get first. There's an elimination mode, which you start off with like six cars and there's five laps, and at the end of each lap, the last place gets eliminated. There's a pursuit where you're a cop car, you know, and you've got to take out like the wanted criminals, which are in other cars. There's lots of different kind of modes, and you just play through all of them, and they keep changing as you go through. And then to move on to the next class, you have to finish the Grand Prix at the end, and that's kind of how the progression works.
How do you feel about, like, because one of the things that makes it feel super super Burnout is like if you say smash a car off the road, it does that kind of side on replay type thing, and then you know you see it did it, you know, Burnout Paradise even did this, but
yeah,
you know, you knock a car out and it sort of gives you a camera angle of them, the replay of them being smashed, and then you go back into the race. How do you still? Because that felt I'm not sure about that. I don't know if I still want that in my sort of arcade games. I don't know how you felt about that.
So I really loved it because I think the way it does it, like, so you purposely crash into a car, you know they're going to go into the side. It shows you the replay, and it, like, if it's right on the edge of a corner that you're about to take, the game will continue after you've taken that corner. So it kind of automatically takes a corner for you. So
that's
it doesn't
what
go
I was,
back
yeah.
into the action and you crash. Like, it's very smart that way. So you've got a safety net. So you're never like risking. It's even like a skill. Like, if you could use that to your advantage. Like, if you're going into a corner, you can speed up with the sole purpose of taking an opponent down and not worrying about the corner, because you know that you're always going to be back on track. So that really kind of helps. And like, the more you do takedowns and you get to watch them, it never got kind of old. Like, I that was one of the kind of things I really enjoyed about it. There are some negatives, obviously, because it's not got the kind of polish or the stability of a big kind of developer, which I know that doesn't always mean anything, but the Burnout games were very polished. There was very kind of limited lag in that kind of thing. Like, with... It's a bit like Trials, to be honest, when you're coming up to a corner or, you know, you're trying to dodge the oncoming traffic or whatever. I faced a few kind of lagging issues where it kind of jutted forward and caused me to crash, that kind of thing. And that's never good in a racing game that requires speed and, like, your precision of movement, and it does that to you. So,
But you talk about speed. It has got a very... It's very quick. It's got a good sense of speed. Like, this game is really fast.
And like, it reminds you of playing, because like, on all the old Burnout games, you have got an idea of what's going on around you, but your main focus for the entire lap is pretty much the centre of the screen. You're just looking at the rest of the track in front of you. You're not taking anything else in. You're liking this kind of zone, and it's just I haven't had that for a while. Like, I don't play a lot of racing games, and I enjoy the arcade racer more so than any kind of sim. So it's nice to kind of go back to that Burnout game. And I know we had Burnout Paradise recently, but it's nice to have something a bit new. And it shows their skill as a development team. They're still able to create that on the smaller team that they've got. And yes, there are a few issues, but it's kind of to be expected. I think if their kind of goal was to go for that arcade old school feel, but we're doing that, it feels very, like you said earlier, bare bones. It doesn't feel like a complete package. And at the minute, there's no online capabilities, but that is coming with DLC, I think. So you will get that eventually. But there are like leaderboards and stuff like that. So it depends what you want out of it. But I think if there's people that love Burnout, they're going to love playing this just because it's that old Burnout feel, like Burnout 3. And it's good. Yeah, I enjoyed it.
I mean, speaking of, like, if you'll love that, then you'll like this. That's kind of how I feel about Mextermination Force, which is currently a Switch-only game. I think it is coming to other consoles, but they haven't confirmed. And it's kind of as if you loved Cuphead, you'll like Mextermination Force, because it's the similar boss rush kind of side-scroller. It obviously doesn't have Cuphead's incredible art style, and if I'm honest with you, it doesn't have its tightness either. Like, the jump's a bit floaty in Mextermination Force, but I will say some of the bosses do make up for that because they're so clever. There's like a, it's like, so you have to shoot away the armor on the bosses. They're like these huge insects or just creatures generally, and like, you know, you have to shoot their legs off to reveal like a silver part, which you can, you know, it's metal and you can climb metal, and then you find like a big red button which you can hit with your melee attack. And it's like, it's a very difficult game. Some of the difficulty comes from the slightly awkward platforming.
Yes,
but it is up my alley. Like, it's not a patch on Cuphead, which is, in terms of boss rush games, I think Cuphead's devs were smart because they recognised that people probably originally saw Cuphead and it was so long coming, they thought it's like, oh, this is just a couple of bosses and you're done, and they threw in some platforming and stuff and like some run and gun levels. I think they were smart about that, whereas what I've played of Mextermination Force is just a boss rush game. You know, you've got your shop where you can buy weapons and health upgrades, and you know, there are abilities that unlock as you progress. Like, I'm not going to spoil, but like, say one of them is the ability to grab metal and climb on it. And that then plays into the boss design, you know, where it starts off simply a case of you have to dodge, like there's a robot that punches at you, jump and land on its arms, run up to its head, and, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Then they integrate the kind of, oh, you can now climb on metal. So there's like this huge skyscraper style boss that you have to keep shooting off the armor as you go, sort of solving a platform puzzle as you climb to the top, smash its head in and kill it from the top. So it's actually clever. And I think it's like a 3-person dev team, which makes it a little bit more impressive. Mm. I hadn't played the devs. It's all right looking. It's cartoony. It's like a Sunday morning cartoon. But like, I hadn't played Gunman Clive, which is the game that came before it from this dev. So I can't really comment on that. But I do like Mextermination Force. It's a bit unfortunate timing in that Cuphead is coming to Switch, I think, this month as well.
Yeah.
And
yes, it is. Yeah.
I can't talk about Cuphead in a review sense, but I did talk about it before, and I will say it runs very well on Switch, with slightly longer load times than the Xbox One, but not by that much that you're like, oh my god, you know, it's just a bit. And like, generally, I can't in good conscience say get Mextermination Force instead of Cuphead. It's just not Cuphead's just a brilliant game. And I don't think anyone's going to buy both, because who needs two boss rush games at the same time? It is a good game. Like I say, it's just unfortunate timing that it's coming out at the same time as Cuphead, which, apart from the fact that people are like, oh my god, Cuphead, that game's going to be perfect on Switch, it's also kind of amazing an Xbox exclusive is coming to Switch. So there's kind of all manner of things around the idea of Cuphead's existence and what it means for sort of the ongoing relationship between Microsoft and Nintendo. But back to Mextermination Force, I do like it. It's a good game. I'd say the easiest thing to do is to go to our website, godisageek.com, and look at Mixed Review, because I think it's pretty much on the money. Like, I think I liked it a little bit more than him, but in terms of score, I'm not much different to him.
Yeah.
I say good game. Just didn't blow me away, but I do. It is impressive that it's made by such a small team. But so's Cuphead, you know. So's Cuphead. I don't want to keep comparing it, so let's move on. I've also been playing, by the way, Final Fantasy VII. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's, it's a new game. It's just come out on Nintendo Switch.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going
to
say
this, to be honest.
Yeah, they're not great. Well, they've actually put some smoothing on them. They've put some smoothing on them to make them a bit nicer. I will say the instant that very first song plays in the very first cutscene. So I've put off playing Final Fantasy VII again for some time because it's one of my, it's probably my joint favourite game of all time, okay?
Wow.
And I am very much aware that a lot of PlayStation era games have not aged well because of the 3D polygonal nature. But I really, really thought Switch could be great. I could just sit there and play this on the sofa, like with my family in the room. And I had to go for it. And I'm glad I did because while, yeah, sure, look, it doesn't look like it did to me back then as whatever age I was in 1997, was it? I can't remember. It's still... I think Final Fantasy VII gets a doing sometime. I think people have turned on it. You know how sort of people turn on certain games? Like BioShock Infinite was amazing and then suddenly it wasn't. I still think it's amazing. I thought that Final Fantasy VII goes up and down in that sort of respect, right? Yeah. I think Final Fantasy VII does quite a lot for the genre because I can't name too many JRPGs that get you into the game as quickly as VII does. I don't actually know if you've played it. Are you a fan of it? You know what I mean?
I haven't touched it since it came out, like originally, and it was 97, yeah. But I haven't seen or played any other version of it. So, like other than the main moments, it would be very new to me. So, with it being on Switch, I do kind of want to play it because it seems like you say, it'd be good to just sit down and just play it with your family and bring, like, especially your kids into a game that was so fantastic in the past, and I'm sure it still holds up very well in terms of story and stuff. So there's something I'd like to try.
I like the story still, but it's going to be difficult to divorce myself from the fact it's one of my favourite games and meant so much to me at the time. What I will say... is that, again, I don't think there's many JRPGs that get you playing this quickly. Like, you tend to get as a cutscene, and then it's like you're into the battle. You're learning the system. And, of course, then it slowly doles out the story, and it slowly doles out a few more mechanics, like introduction of materia and summons. But I think it gets you playing quite quickly, and that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
What helps is that there are cheats included in this version, okay? So if you click the left stick... Left stick turns it to 3x speed. So what I had forgotten about this game is it's very slow moving. Actually, just moving around, your characters move very slowly. So 3x speed obviously gets that game moving quicker. If you click the right stick in battle, you get basically non-stop refilling health and I think magic as well.
Yeah.
And your limit break also goes up instantly as well. So basically every turn you've got full health and you can do a limit break. And...
Right.
Yes, that's a cheat that breaks the game a bit. Like, you don't need to think tactically. You don't need to use magic very often. There are some battles that you still have to because just the way they were designed. But the cool thing is, for someone like me, and I'm going to link this into the difficulty chat that I think probably needs to happen. I don't know that we need to have it, but generally, it kind of adds that layer of accessibility. And even for someone like myself who loves this game, I'm not playing this for challenge. I'm not playing this to think, Final Fantasy VII, JRPG, 60 hours. I'm playing it as a completely, just 100% a nostalgia trip. I am loving just chipping away at this half an hour here, 45 minutes, an hour, whatever. And I'm not being challenged, but I'm just getting through the story and enjoying the mechanics of it. And it's just a nostalgia trip to me. And so that's great, that accessibility. And I also, if you click left and right stick, it turns on no random battles mode. Now, that sounds worrying because it's like, well, if there's no random battles, how do I level up? Well, you don't need to because you've got infinite health and your limit breaks. And
yeah,
I see there are a few battles I've had where it's like, okay, these are slight. I need to turn some of these cheats. So, for example, Aerith, if you remember, which you won't because no one will, her limit break she starts with is healing wind. So you don't want her to be constantly healing if you've got a cheat on that gives you full health all the time.
Yeah.
And she can't attack because it goes so quickly at 3x speed and you can't do anything but limit. But you can just like not use her for that fight. Just keep waiting because it's so quick and you're not taking damage. I really like this game still. It was worried me that I would be like, oh, I'm going to... Because Mario World is one of the other ones. And I play that yearly. But I was worried that I would get to Final Fantasy VII and be like, this has broken me. This is not the game I remember. I still love it. I still love it. And that's a really nice feeling to not have one of my all-timers kind of kicked down.
That can happen a lot at the minute with constant games coming out.
Especially with like a 3D game from that era.
Mm.
But moving into kind of the last game I've been playing, or rather I've stopped playing, I've given up on Sekiro. I think I've given up on Sekiro. I don't know that this time next week I might be talking to you and saying, no, I've completed it. I think I'm there with it. I got to a boss that, very gentle spoiler, it's just a name. It's so one, I'm going to count to five, just in case you don't want to know the boss name. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, Genichiro. And that does sound like I've just sneezed, admittedly. But I can't be bothered, Chris.
Yeah.
I can't.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, sorry, mate, carry on.
No, I don't know what to say. I feel like I don't like giving up. I've never given up. I think I've told a story about Dark Souls 3 pre-release, you know, when it was debug code and there was no one to play with it. You just had to beat it on your own if you wanted to finish the game before you reviewed it, which I did. The expletives I shouted when I killed that final boss and the amazing feeling. I don't want to spend hours talking about the difficulty thing, because if you are on Twitter, it's been done to death. It's a really interesting discussion, because the argument is basically, if you make... I always said that FromSoft games should have a tutorial, and I always said it should be an optional thing on the main menu that click this for tutorial, because that in no way damages... Say if I don't want it, that no way damages my experience. I don't have to click it. And I was... The game that I... This is going to be a... You're probably going to... You and our listeners are going to go... When you hear what I'm about to say. The game I think of when I think of accessibility and how Sekiro or games like it could work is FIFA. Because FIFA... the sliders, right?
Absolutely.
So in FIFA, there are so many sliders that allow you to... Now, if you go online, obviously, this is going to screw you up, because the game online is balanced to be the game online. But if you just want to play offline, you can adjust the game. You can tailor the game to just how you want it to be. You can adjust to the minutia that you can make your opponent's speed 30%, and you could put yours up to 99%. If you want to do that, that's fine. And you doing that would have no effect on the way I play, because I play with most of the sliders on default, for example. As someone who loves these games, I find myself thinking, if I could, I don't know, just change something like when I resurrect, I get 100% health instead of half or whatever it is. If I could just change it to get two resurrects, or three or four or five... I just wonder, would I be giving up? And that the argument then is the get good argument, which is just, sure, okay, fine. But if someone's paid for a game and they feel... Like, I was going up against this boss over and over again, and I stopped because I beat him, okay? I beat the boss. I did what the game wanted me to do. Now, FromSoft games have this thing of, you think you've beaten a boss, and then all of a sudden... Oh no, he had a third phase or another health bar. We just weren't showing you. And it's always pissed me off. Like, Ornstein and Smile pissed me off, because... Do you know what I mean? Like, these are... Yeah. I feel like you're breaking your own rules. If you're showing me for, say, I don't know, 15 hours, that this is how the game works, and you kill this thing, you take two of these health bars away, and it's done. It feels the dirty trick.
Mm.
And this happened in this fight. And I was killed within 15 seconds, and it was the first time I'd got to that phase, because obviously I didn't know it was going to happen. And then what happened is I sat there and went, so to be able to learn, because this game wants you to learn. It wants you to learn patterns, learn routines, you know, master it. But to do that, I'd have to beat the previous two health bars to get this third phase, or second phase, however you want to put it. And I sat there and I went, other games would give you a checkpoint. And it was just one of those, and I'm not arguing that I'm right or wrong, I'm just saying personally, because I can only speak personally, that was the point where I was like, I think I'm done with these kinds of games for a bit. I've always enjoyed them. I've accepted sometimes they, I don't want to say cheat you, but they make you feel cheated. But this time I kind of went, nah, I think that's it for me. I think, because the question I was left with is, am I having any fun? And I wasn't sure. It wasn't a nope, it was a I'm not sure. And that was enough to make me go, whatever I am doing, I need to take a break. I just don't see.
Yeah, no, I completely agree.
Like, I listened to you the other few, I've been catching up on the podcast, so I haven't been on, if you know what I mean. And I listened to you the other week talking about the wrestling boss, which I'm guessing is the ogre you were talking about.
Yes.
Did you beat him in the end? Have you gone back?
I haven't gone back, mate. Like,
will you go back?
I don't know, because like I was playing it. Well, we're putting a feature video together, which you'll be able to watch soon, where I actually talk about this. And, like, I love the idea of these games. I love the worlds that they've created. Like, Dark Souls, that world is phenomenal. Like, Bloodborne is even better, in my opinion. And Sekiro, I love Japan and Japanese history. I love the Sengoku period. I love everything to do with samurais and stuff like that. So that setting couldn't be any better for me. And I love the way they're using the violence. It's very artistic with the way the blades thrust into the bodies and then you pull it out and there's that like fountain of blood. Like the aesthetic is fantastic. The kind of speed to it is faster than Bloodborne with the use of the grappling hook. You can get into great positions to take down like the soldiers. But when it comes to the bosses, I just find it so frustrating, and it not everyone can get these games. Like that, I'm not saying you can't become better like through practice, but I feel that every game, whatever it is, should be accessible to everybody. And there are people a lot of people that want to play this game and have maybe bought this game and tried it, and it's just so difficult. There's no accessibility for people that just can't get on with it. And I don't think it's a bad thing at all that there's games out there that, like with FIFA, with the sliders, like that's brilliant. Like everyone's got a different threshold with difficulty. So I think all games should give those options. And I'm not saying it's arrogance on FromSoft's part, because that is their style of game. But I think to kind of moan at people for saying like they want to play it and they'll play it, but as long as there's the mods in place to be able to cheat, then
well, it's interesting you say about mods, because like I don't know how, obviously I'm a big sort of fan of the genre. Like I subscribe to multiple people who just do these kind of, you know, videos about Sekiro and Dark Souls and Bloodborne and Lore. You know, I subscribe to a lot of these people, and a lot of these people use the PC version because often it runs better, but a lot of them will mod it and then like make a mode where they can just push the camera around the world and explore it. And it's like, I'm not even asking for that, but these people who obviously love these games even more than me are using cheat engine or whatever to not exploit but explore. And I'm not saying every game needs to be for everyone. I'm not, because that's not at all. The authorial intent is not what I'm arguing here. No. I'm just... So I'll give you an example which is non-gaming related. We went out as a family the other day, and I won't say where we went. I'm sure the person doesn't listen, but I don't like throwing anyone under the bus, so I'm going to avoid even getting close to that. We went out as a family somewhere that we'd booked this place. And obviously other people had booked a certain section of this place as well. And there was a woman there who was constantly leaning into what would be considered our... this sounds so strange, but again, I just want to be careful. She was constantly kind of in our zone, shall we say, okay? And every time I sat near where I had paid to sit, by the way, I sort of had to duck because she was leaning over into our zone. And I walked away from this booking quite pissed off that this person had been willfully or unwillingly ignorant about how much of someone else's space she was encroaching into. And it doesn't matter that she's a she. It could have been a he. It could have been anyone. But the point, this example, it was a woman. And she was there with her kids, and she was not watching her kids. Her kids were running around in our zone as well, getting in our way a little bit. And again, they were generally not being, certainly the way that we as a family would conduct ourselves.
Yeah.
And I left this thing thinking, it would be nice if people could fucking think about other people for a change. Because I spend my whole time walking around worrying about other people. And I think there are lots of people who are the same. I imagine you do the same as well. You're constantly making sure you're not in someone's way or you don't encroach onto someone else's fun. I'm of opinion that I should not, unless I can absolutely help it, affect anyone else's life unless I'm directly involved with them.
Yeah.
And that's kind of this. Like, I don't necessarily say I'm going to start on easy or adjust the accessibility options to make it easy. I just don't know that them being there would bother me in either way, if you know what I mean. Like, if I don't see how them being there to enable people who, let's say, for example, don't have two hands the way I've got two hands. I don't see what including things to make the game play. And if it's a byproduct of they have to make the accessibility options make the game easier for them, to make it playable for them, you don't have to touch any of that. You know, think about... So Dragon Ball FighterZ, you've played that.
Yeah.
You can do a combo by smashing one button, and it looks amazing. But you ain't going to win a match against anyone who's half decent because they will be doing all that stuff manually. But the option's there and it doesn't hurt you. And in fact, for me, and again, this is a very personal thing, I don't know about you, Chris, but I found that knowing that was there was great, but it kind of made me want to be able to do that stuff more myself. It actually encouraged me. It almost made me want to go, oh, I'm not using that option, I'm doing that. You know what I mean? And I don't know, man. I think this is a really strange debate, and it seems to be going on for a long time. And I just don't see the problem with accessibility options being I don't really have a bet in this fight because it's not for me, you know. And I can both accept that I'm not going to finish Sekiro probably, but I can kind of also kind of wish there was an option that I could enable that would let me, like, does Devil May Cry 5, no, sorry, does Resident Evil 2 become a worse game if you die 10 times and it offers you easy mode? I don't know. I don't think so. You don't have to take that option.
No.
People could stand to be a little bit more caring towards others that, you know, that this, like, if people are complaining, oh, yeah, but if the option's there, I might take it. That's not really on anyone but you, is it?
It doesn't matter that these options are there. Like, if a game has accessibility options that help the gamer, then brilliant. I'm probably not going to use them. Like, I personally, if a game's that, like, I'm trying to think of a game that is difficult, not to the kind of Sekiro style, but there has been them where they've been pretty difficult. And I've put it on too easy just to play through because I'm enjoying the story and the gameplay. That exists.
Can you think of a game that you played on easy? Not necessarily for review or for anything, just generally. Like, I'm trying to think. I can't really think offhand. I'm so good at games. Not at all. Like, I'm just trying to think. I mean, I'm sort of doing that with Final Fantasy VII. This is why I linked these in. I'm kind of doing that now. You know?
Yeah, no, not off the top of my head. But I mean,
like, are you telling me, like, I mean, I know the answer to this, but how many times have you played FIFA, like, on a career mode and, like, smashed teams 20-0 and gone, I should upgrade the difficulty a bit, and then not done it, and then done it a bit more, and then gone, no, I will do it now, and then done it. You know, I don't know. It's a debate that's going to rage on, Chris, I think.
I think people are very, like, they're not seeing the bigger picture. It's not just about, oh, you want it uneasy, you rubbish at games. There are people out there that have mental health issues, which affects their, like, they can become disorientated. It can be difficult. There are people with mental disabilities where these accessibility options does exactly that and allows them to play easier games. They're there for younger people. Like, they're not Dark Souls, but, like, FIFA, my eldest daughter has got into football in a massive way this year. And like, I played FIFA with her for the very first time the other day. And like, we put it on easy and she absolutely adored it. Like, they're not there for the hardcore gamers, you know. You go and play Sekiro and complete it and be amazing and tell everyone about it. That's brilliant. But not everyone is like that. People love video games. They love all kinds of video games. They should all be accessible to everyone. And I just think there's the people. Some people have been quite blind to every element to this. I think they're not discussing it. They are ranting about it, and it's the vitriol coming out against people that do want accessibility options, which is a problem.
I mean, I would shout out people like Stephen Spohn from, I don't know if I'm saying his name right, actually. Stephen Spohn? Apologies, Stephen. I doubt you listen, but just in case. Who works for Able Gamers. And I think it's weird because, like, there was all this thing with Microsoft about their adaptive controller and everyone was so great about it. But now when it comes to a FromSoft game, everyone's raging. But people are equating difficulty with accessibility. And I think what people are asking for is, It's not I'm crap at this game. It's I can't play it. It demands something of me I am not able to give. And in my case, maybe I'm just getting on a bit and my reactions are bad. I don't know. And that's not the same thing. I'm able to accept that and say this is a bit beyond me. That's not the same thing as someone who physically can't play it but really wants to. And it's little bit sort of colourblind to just be like, nah, fuck you. I don't know. It feels like it's an empathy issue to me, and there's not much empathy going on. And I don't know why I'm surprised, but it was nice to see someone like Corey Barlog come out and say about it.
Absolutely, I saw that. Yeah.
That guy seems cool. I doubt he's kind of the guy I doubt we'll ever get to interview, but he seems cool. I like that guy. I think we talked about him when he was reading the reviews.
When
he was in, you know, I think we talked about, well, you know, we were all a big fan of his game, you know. I forget, did it? I can't even remember. Did it win Game of the Year?
It won five awards, including Game of the Year. Yeah,
that's right. I've got time for that chap. I don't know. And I would love people to hear, like, if you're watching this on YouTube or whatever, leave a comment about what you think. If you're gonna be a douche, don't bother. Just don't. It's not worth it because we won't read it, and we certainly won't read it on the podcast. But I don't know. Like, I wonder, you know, if you love Sekiro or if you're struggling with Sekiro, let us know. What would you think about if it had sliders in it? Like, if you could, I don't know, just reduce enemy health or increase, you know, Sekiro's health.
Very, very useful to a lot of people.
If you could widen the parry window, like in the same way you can reduce FIFA speed, you know, if you could widen the parry window, I don't know.
Like for me personally, I find it difficult to adjust the difficulty because, like, intrinsically, I feel like I'm not kind of. There's like a pride issue with certain things, and that is ridiculous. Yeah. And I know that, but that me personally, I very rarely will turn it too easy if I struggle with it, I'll just persevere, which is just stupid. Mm. But that's just something that's me. I think, as I say, it'd be great. So
I was reading back my Cuphead review. God, it must have been a couple of years ago now. And I really thought, because I love Cuphead, and I was really surprised by the score I gave it, because I think it was like an 8.5, or it might have even have been an 8. I would give it higher than that now if I re-reviewed that game on Xbox One. But one of my complaints about it, I had forgotten about. And the complaint was that if you play on, I forget what they call it, but for the argument's sake, we call it easy mode. If you play on easy mode in that game, you can't finish it. There is a section of the game that only unlocks if you're playing on the standard difficulty. And I remember rereading my review how much that pissed me off, because although, in fairness, my kids, like my eldest, didn't care, and my youngest loves that game and still plays it now. There are people that are going to find it too tough, and it seemed really weird to put all these bosses in where they did lower the difficulty. What they essentially did was, it was like, say there was a three-phase fight, easy mode knocked it to two phases, and it just made them take quicker damage and stuff. It was really weird to me that final thing that kind of meant you fully completed the game, they just lopped it out for easy mode and said, yep, you're done, you don't get to see the rest of it. And I've kind of championed that sort of stuff. But also, I don't think you or I are the people to talk about this. We've done it because it's a podcast and it's the thing that everyone's talking about, but I'm not qualified to talk about accessibility because I can play games comfortably.
Yeah, exactly.
Not in all games. I think, again, the issue is an empathy issue, and to think about the people who can't but really want to, and to them saying get good is just a fucking insult. It's just such an insult to say get good when someone can't hold a controller. Do you know what I mean? I don't know.
Yeah.
Moving on. Listener correspondence. I'm not going to read the one at the top of the list because it would be wildly inappropriate for the discussion we've just had. So I'm going to read Thomas's first, and we'll come back to Darren's. Sorry, Darren, you said the question. It would be so inappropriate to read this question after a very sincere discussion about accessibility. Thomas has... This is the Thomas section. Dude has sent us four questions, and because he's bothered to do that, I'm going to ask every single one of them. And the first one, Chris, I'm going to ask you, what games do you play when you're feeling down, and what is it about that game that lifts your spirits?
So, it's very boring, but I haven't... Like FIFA at the minute.
I was going to say FIFA the same.
I don't think there's any particular game that I've got on my hard drive for either consoles that like I will return to just to make me feel better. FIFA and the act of scoring and playing well is incredibly satisfying. So like I've just finished like a season in about 2-3 weeks. Just
it's
because
very strange, Chris, because so have I.
Have you? Yeah. I mean, it's incredibly satisfying. And the whole process of playing the career mode and managing a team and all the like little intricacies, that takes me away. And like, I love football, so it just helps. So I'd say FIFA, definitely. That's always, ever since I've been younger, that's always been the game. I can just happily go back to at any point, no matter what big game's out, and just blast through a few games.
For me, it's kind of any of the good Marios. Like, I'm part of the problem because I want Super Mario World to come to Switch because that's why I've got my Wii U still hooked up, that and Mario Maker, which, you know, that one's coming soon. But yeah, kind of that, Mario Galaxy, Mario Odyssey, anything Mario kind of just, I don't know, I think it's just, it's happy, it's just a happy looking game, like the bright colours. Like I tell you the other game, I was feeling a bit miserable, so I played Street Fighter 4 and 5. Again, very colourful fighting games, and it just, I don't know, I'm not good at them like I used to be, but I just jumped into training mode and kicked the shit out of someone, and I guess that says fairly, you know, a bit more about me than I probably should be admitting. On to Thomas's next question. He says, what video game character would you like as a pet, and how would you look after it? He thinks a pet Yoshi would be good, but I'm not sure about the size of litter tray required for a small dinosaur. Can I have a Cuphead as a pet? They seem like they're quite small dudes.
Like this is another boring answer, and I'm sorry, but like dog meat from Fallout 3. Like I care
that's
for
just
that
a dog, Chris.
Yeah, but I've got a dog myself. Like, but
me too.
This was at a time when I didn't have one, but like, okay. I cared for that dog so much. And recently, my horse Evelyn in Red Dead Redemption. Which is also the name of my daughter. Yeah,
that
take
seems
it out what
practical.
You will. But when I lost her in Red Dead after 30, 40 hours, that was pretty tough. So I just like your normal pets. I think anything out of the ordinary, I wouldn't know how to take care of it, and it would either die or eat me. So, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to go for a Pikmin.
Yeah, they'd be pretty straightforward, I think.
Yeah, pretty easy to look after. I'm really helpful, colourful. Little dudes.
Yeah,
they are colourful. Yeah. There's noticing the theme. And now Thomas has decided to insult us, and he says you're mostly all old like me. So what are your top five entries in your respective bucket list? Oh,
this is going to go deep.
Well, see, for me, the things that have ended up in my bucket list, I would never have chosen them to be there. Have a heart attack is a strange one, but I survived. So, you know, I've played in bands and been in a recording studio and been on stage and had people call me a rock star. And that's, I suppose, something on my bucket list. I would say I've delivered a baby. So there's that. I've been I never know what the correct terminology for this is, but like when you conduct a funeral, like the vicar would do, I've done that.
Wow.
So I've done quite a bit. So I'm kind of boring these days because I've done all that and I don't feel like need to do much. Like, I would, once I wanted to bungee jump, I will never do that now. I'm way too heavy for that. I would be frightened that I'd die. I don't know, man.
Pretty amazing stuff. This is such a...
I'll write a book one day.
Yeah, I mean, that...
Would like to interview someone, like... I've interviewed lots of people. I would like to interview someone in the gaming industry that is like... I don't know. That, you know what I mean? A Cliffy B style first, but... A Corey Barlog, I would love to...
Oh, I'd love to chat
Chat to him. I think he'd be a cool good guy. Interview, yeah. You know? Spencer, I'd love to chat to. Jack Tretton, when he was at Sony, I would love to chat to. You know?
I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what I've done. I've played in front of about 2,500 people.
Yeah.
And this is a cool story, right? So, I don't think it's going to go the way you think either. So, I'll be quick. When I was about 9 or 10, like, our family is religious, and in being so meant I had to go to church as well. And I had to do plays and stuff for Christmas, and it was like really uncomfortable. And I've told the story about playing Jesus as a boxer who boxes Satan in a boxing match in front of the church, which was horrendous. However, I got a guitar for Christmas when I was about 12, 13, it was around then anyway. And like someone from church was like, right, I'll teach you how to play guitar. And I thought, well, fair enough. So got about 2 weeks of practice. And then he jokingly went, oh, you'll be playing at the Playhouse soon, which is like a theatre near us in Derby, the Derby Playhouse. It's no longer there. But anyway, so I like joked it off. And then the morning before, the day I was supposed to be doing it, my mum was like, you need to practice these songs because you're going to be doing it in this church thing. I fucking had to go the next day in front of 2,000 people in the theatre, play songs I didn't know, and sing on a microphone. Now, to be fair, I wasn't alone, but there were like 3 other people. And thankfully, for some reason, whether it was divine intervention, my microphone didn't work. So I just mimed and no one knew any different. But I did have to play guitar, and it was fucking terrifying. So... If you class playing in front of 1,000 people in general, then that's on my bucket list. It's not something I would have wanted to do.
I think it is, yeah.
But it was.
I think it should be.
It was shit. I hate. Well, yeah, I would like to do it on my own terms, maybe actually in a band that I liked. But stuff like I was in a band. I released my own EP when I was younger. I've released 2 books, like 2 poetry collections. Stuff like that, I'd love to be recognised on a grander scale for like writing, not for the fame, but like I've always had this thing of when I die, what am I leaving behind? And I know like my family will miss me and they'll always be that, but I just feel like I want to leave a mark on the world somehow. So something like that, like to have something out there that is used in schools or is in the British Library or anything like that. That's kind of like my fantasy thing. But yeah.
Well, there you go. You might get there, mate. You've got plenty of time. You're still young.
Exactly.
Thomas's last question is, are you ever too old to wear gaming-related clothing? If so, at what age do you stop? I'm going to say, nope, you can wear what you want, mate. Why on earth? Don't care what other people would say about what you wear. As long as you're comfortable in your skin and what you're wearing on your skin, I don't see why it should bother anyone else.
Too right, mate. Too right.
Sticking with age stuff, Luke Phillips at LukeyEDH says, with age do you find yourselves picking out your battles? Sorry, I'm going to start that again because that was just, I can't read. I can read, but that's not well read. Luke Phillips at LukeyEDH, and I'm not going to cut this because, you know, we're all about our flaws. He says, with age, do you find yourselves picking your battles with what games you invest in? Since becoming a parent, since becoming a parent, this is not a difficult tweet to read, and I am butchered it like multiple times. Since becoming a parent, Lukey says, I've had to be far more selective of what games I play because time is so limited. And again, I'm going to just agree with you and say I used to play all the JRPGs, and now they have to be incredible for me to play them. Or like sped up like Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah, I mean, Yeah, no, I agree. It's tough when you first have kids, and like it gets to an age where they go to school, so you do end up having more time. But when
then they get old enough to play your consoles, and you lose it again.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, getting older, playing games. When you're younger, you've got all the time in the world to play every game and complete every game and get your platinums or whatever. You do find you're being selective, but by the age where like I'm 30, how old am I? Shit, 35. I've already found that.
Wait, I thought we were the same age.
Well, how old are you?
Older than that.
Are you?
Moving on.
Chicken.
Moving on.
But you've already kind of found your type of game that you want to play, so I very rarely stray outside of the confines of what I'm comfortable with.
Right. Luke's got another question for us, Chris, and I'll let you go first with this one. What is your... I'll try to read his tweet properly this time. What is your number one choice when it comes to takeout? Because I know you boys have a question about food. Yeah, he's right. I'm hungry as
fucking
we sit
yes.
here. What's your favourite takeaway?
Favourite takeaway, Chinese.
Just 100% no... It's just absolute Chinese, yeah?
It's if like... Because like... If you have a takeaway, you have to be in the mood for a takeaway, like a certain type of takeaway.
Wait,
you never like.
Do you?
I very rarely.
Oh right.
Well,
I
very rarely go. Right. Well, I could have kebab. I could have chips. I could have a Chinese. I could have.
Oh,
pizza,
I see what you're saying. You're saying,
Indian.
Oh, I fancy like, Chinese tonight. Yeah.
You always kind of have a thing you fancy.
I do now fancy a Chinese tonight.
And I'm always more satisfied when I'm having a Chinese. So Chinese than pizza, but Chinese all the way.
I mean, not to be boring, I'm exactly the same. That is the exact same order. I would go Chinese food first and I would go pizza second. But the thing about pizza is I think I'm very specific. I don't like Domino's pizza. This is going to anger people. I'm aware of this. Sometimes local pizza places are fine, but I am a fan of Pizza Hut. I do like the one they do with barbecue drizzle all over the top of it, chorizo. I'm a big fan. I don't get the hype around Domino's. I don't. I've had it multiple times, tried it multiple times, different kinds, and it's like, this is all right, but it's all right. Like the dough at Pizza Hut, unless it's just our local Pizza Hut, is really nice. Really
no,
nice,
dough,
Chris.
Dough from Pizza Hut is nice. Definitely.
I don't find that with
Domino's.
Domino's doesn't feel that great.
No, there's a pizza at Domino's called the Meteor, which I haven't had a Domino's in like 10 years. It's been a long time, but I remember having the Meteor, and it was like, had meatballs on it. It had amazing cheese-filled crusts. Oh, it's just gorgeous. Barbecue sauce, a lot. So,
while we're talking about pizza, then so what would you go in terms of base? Do you go thin? Do you go
fluffy?
Do you go stuffed crust? Where do you go?
Nice and deep. I like it nice and deep. Okay. I like a lot of...
Took us 15 minutes, but we found the name of this podcast this week.
I tend to find...
Nice and deep.
Like, a lot of...
If that don't get people fucking clicking, mate, what's nothing's going to be, let's be honest.
A lot of meat. I like a nice deep base with plenty of meat on, and then I like my crust filled with cheese and garlic and herb dip to dip that in. Like, that to me...
Okay.
...is the perfect
That's good.
Pizza.
No, it's not my choice, but I'd go with it.
Yeah.
Speaking of strange foods and that, I had a Diet Coke with strawberry today, which I kind of like. Tasted like sweets.
Strawberry?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know they do strawberry.
I've seen it anywhere else. It was just in this shop.
No, it's new, that is.
Well, I'm here. Yeah, it's quite nice. I'm hungry now, and I wish people sent us food to review, because I'd love to just have like a side job of just like watch eating taste testing and stuff. I mean, we could just do it. I mean, listen, we got a Patreon. If people are happy for us to spend that Patreon money, if you people who support us and are listening to this early are happy with us spending the Patreon money on exotic flavors of different things we've never tried before, like I saw a friend tweet something like, "There's a Japanese Pepsi at the moment. I can't remember what flavor it was, but." It looked really nice. If you're happy for us to do that, seriously, I'll order like one of them for me and Chris, and we'll just chat and do a video series where we review. It's fine. If that's what you want, we will do it. Do you want that? Let us know. Last question this week, Darren, the question I couldn't read after the accessibility discussion. After you poop, a bit disappointed he's gone with poop and not poo. After you poo, I'm changing it. Do you wipe front to back or, because you're a weirdo, wipe back to front? Very personal question, but I'm quite comfortable answering it. Are you?
I'm comfortable answering it, and it's a case of most... Right, so I'm going to bare my soul here. Chris, am I arsehole?
Simplify this question. Yeah, I'm going to bare my arsehole here. Yeah. We could simplify the question and say, do you like shit on your balls? You know?
No, but there's like a certain way I do it, right? So I go from the front to the back until it's mainly gone. But then I worry that when I'm wiping from front to back, as I pull away, I've left a bit on the back. So I tend to make sure that my last wipe is just the top, but like back to front, but not all the way down. And only just to kind of get rid of any remnants that I might have wiped up and left there. It's a pretty complicated process, but it works.
I can think of no finer way to end a podcast. Thank you, Chris, or at FirstAvenger83, as he is known on Twitter. I'm at GWSF, the site's at God is a Geek. It's manic at the moment in terms of games, and I'll be honest with you, there's a lot of stuff happening in all of our lives, which it's nothing secret, it's just not interesting to talk to you about on a podcast. So we're desperately trying to get back to sort of three or four people on the podcast on a regular basis, but we will always leave you with a podcast every week. If you don't subscribe, you should. This is every Wednesday you get the discussions that you've just heard. That's pretty normal for around here. It tends to devolve into food. It doesn't usually devolve into fecal matter. Thanks, Darren. I will say, though, if you are interested and you want to get stuff like this early, the podcast, not the... Patreon.com/GodIsAGeek for $1 a month, which is less than £1 a month, which is basically about a tenner a year. You support us and you can give us access to stuff like... I can't actually say. I think I was just about to say the one you're going to. I don't know if I can say that, so I won't. But you're going to one. But you did go to the Sekiro and Days Gone events, which got us some tasty footage and some impressions that we otherwise couldn't have brought you because we couldn't have played it. That's how this stuff works. It also helps us to get to review events as well. Sometimes some publishers still, they're not so much like they used to be, but they do ask you to come and have a chat and you play a bit of the game and they tend to then give you the game to walk away with. That still happens. And it helps. This it literally helps us gain access to stuff where otherwise we might not be able to give you. And that's ultimately for people who read and watch and listen to God is a Geek's content. So consider patreon.com/GodIsAGeek. I don't like pimping it every... I'm probably going to not do it every week. I'm going to try and, you know, and either you want to or you don't. But just think about it. It's like, say, a tenner a year to ask your best pals in the world, right? Right. Chris, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
And everybody else, we will speak to you next week or whenever you choose to listen. Thanks. Bye-bye for now.